How good a parent are you? If you are a parent, especially a mother, you probably carry around pretty high expectations for yourself. There's a lot of pressure on women to be ideal mothers, homemakers, breadwinners, and disciplinarians who are in perfect shape and raise perfect children. Of course, it's an absurd idea and a harmful myth, according to New York Times opinion writer Jessica Gross. In her new book, Screaming on the Inside, The Unsustainability of American Motherhood, Jessica offers a more humane vision of how to raise children without losing your mind. Here she is with five big ideas from the book.
I'm Jessica Gross, an opinion writer at the New York Times and the author of Screaming on the Inside, The Unsustainability of American Motherhood. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, there is no single right way to parent. I spoke to around 100 contemporary moms for my book, and they all talked about how they felt pressured and guilty about not living up to particular unreasonable ideals. While each mother had slightly different concepts of the ideal, these unrealistic notions, usually about being serene and self-sacrificing every second of the day, did not serve them or their families. I have been covering parenting for over a decade, and I have read reams of research and history, and what all parents need to understand is there is no right way to parent. The truth is that parenting cannot follow a recipe. There's no foolproof set of rules that will result in a permanently happy child. Every parent has different values, and we will all have different ideas about how to pass those values along to our children. What successful parenting has in common is not a particular set of rules, but close observation of the kind of unique humans our children are. Insight number two, ambivalence is human. And mothers are human. One of the most damaging parts of the American motherhood ideal is that we aren't supposed to express anything but perfect love for our children. No one feels perfect love for anything all the time, and that doesn't make you a bad mother or a bad person to admit that. I often think of a piece of advice from my own mother, who is both wise and practiced psychiatry for 40 years. Even about the things we love most, we are truly ambivalent. Ambivalence, in psychoanalytic terms, is not indifference or mixed feelings. As the late psychotherapist Rosica Parker explained in her book Torn in Two, The Experience of Maternal Ambivalence. Ambivalence means quite contradictory impulses and emotions towards the same person coexist. The positive and negative components sit side by side and remain in opposition. We will feel strong pulls of adoration and rage and every emotion in between. Parker described maternal ambivalence as, quote, normal, natural, and eternal. The eternal part of ambivalence is key. Sometimes we imagine mothers of the past as more essentially maternal in some way, as if modern life has stripped away the pure joys of motherhood. But when you read women's diaries and letters from the past 300 years, as I have done while researching this book, that could not be further from the truth. Which leads me to insight number three. Natural motherhood isn't all it's cracked up to be. Many mothers I spoke to felt guilty because they needed medication while they were pregnant, during birth, or afterwards. Others felt bad because they did not breastfeed for very long or at all. They felt that the quote-unquote best kind of mothering was quote-unquote natural, which in the current interpretation means without the involvement of modern medicine or commercial products. While writing my book, I read women's diaries and letters from centuries ago before antibiotics, antidepressants, or formula were available, and that natural motherhood was not a beautiful earth mother fantasy. Women from the 19th century, for example, described giving birth as a, quote, dreaded ordeal and a constant and never-ceasing horror. The mother of a sleepless, colicky infant wrote of the hard feeling she had towards her baby son. I fear I am not very charitable towards babies, as I find myself at such times wishing for a lodge in some vast wilderness where the cry of babies might never reach me more. Another woman said that the thought of nursing her babies for the rest of her life made her want to lie down and die. Insight number four, no country as rich as the U.S. gives as little to parents. Though there have been tremendous gains for mothers at work in the past 50 years, the United States still does not have paid federal leave or consistently subsidized childcare. The U.S. often ranks dead last in terms of postpartum coverage for parents, and our peer nations are far more generous. Countries like Canada, Estonia, Norway, Sweden, and Austria all offer more than a year of paid leave for moms. According to analysis by my colleague Claire Kane Miller at The Times, rich countries contribute an average of $14,000 per year for a toddler's care, compared with just $500 in the U.S. Because the U.S. does so little to support moms and dads, even parents in two-income families fear financial insecurity. The cost of childcare continues to soar. As one mother who works full-time put it to me, I pay pretty much my rent in daycare. Without additional structural support, parenting in America will continue to feel much more stressful than it needs to be. Insight number five, parents have always needed help from their communities. Raising the next generation is too big and important a task to leave for just two parents without additional support. As far back as we can go in prehistory, parents engaged in what biological anthropologists refer to as cooperative breeding, which is the idea that family and community members would help with holding, grooming, and sometimes even feeding your baby. Research shows that modern parents are far better when they do not feel alone. Extended family ties are essential to the well-being of mothers, but family doesn't necessarily have to be people you are related to by blood. The Rapid EC Project, which studied parents of young children during the pandemic, found that high levels of social support can be incredibly protective. Even when families experience economic hardship, if caregivers reported high levels of emotional support, they are much less likely to report stress. Up and down the socioeconomic ladder, emotional supports interrupt the chain reaction from material hardship to child emotional distress. I have experienced this in my own life. We lived with my parents during the spring and summer of 2020 so that we could get help with childcare when COVID shut everything down. Then we decided to live with them again during the summer of 2021, not out of panicked pandemic necessity, but because we missed each other. I never want to go back to my siloed pre-pandemic life. All three generations of my family benefited so much from this renewed closeness.
Thank you, Jessica. That was Jessica Gross with five big ideas from Screaming on the Inside, The Unsustainability of American Motherhood. You might also want to check out our book bite for Ambitious Like a Mother, Why Prioritizing Your Career is Good for Your Kids by Laura Bazelon. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.